standing here so close to me. There's so much I feel that I should say, but words can wait until some other day. Kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time. Haven't felt like this, my dear, since can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. You'll never know how many dreams I dream about you, or just how empty they all seem without you. So kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long, long time.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Okay, hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here in Hawaii. And happy you could join me in listening in. 524-1080 is the number if you got a couple things on your chest or on your shoulders or, you know, a chip or something that's bugging you. Give me a call, 524-1080. You can pick us up live on the Internet at carolcox.com. And on Sundays at 1 o'clock on Channel 54, I have a couple shows airing on Olelo, and we're gravitating toward Olelo, and I think we have about 35 shows now we're posting, and we'll be posting more. So if you want to get the straight skinny and the long version of us, the short version of whatever you've been watching, look us up there. And you can also go to Olelo and .org and just you can play on demand if you're interested. Many of the issues, and basically over the years, the things that I've done, I'm going back and actually laying out the full length of the stories, you know. As many of you recommend and have strongly recommended, go to the media. We need it in the bigger media, and I always poo-poo that, because if you hear it and it's on the little media, as using that term loosely, the question is, what do you do once you learn of the issue? Or is it just a source of information and you just incorporate it in your daily bag of goods and move on? But it will be on Olelo, and we're also going to be broadcasting statewide on Olelo. And again, this is live stream on radio, so social media and the Carol Cox Show, we're going to, right now we have two Facebook pages, Carol Cox and the Carol Cox Show. And we're going to go back to the Carol Cox Show. We had some glitches. And so, you know, whatever pops up, we'll try to post it. If you are interested, don't wait until the news stations and what have you do a story and then you're dissatisfied with that. You actually can have a role in this. And I've often said to many of you out there, you could contact the media, the management here at this station and actually have a show. And it's quite affordable. It just costs some exertion on your part to exert yourself and get up out of the chair and make a phone call to Barry Wagenvoort and just call, leave a message, and tell them you would like to have a show. And I would encourage most of you, don't just sit and listen to what we have to say here. You can be a part of this family and share your thoughts. And nobody's thoughts are wrong. I mean, we may sit here and haggle over it and disagree with one another. But again, at the end of the day, we're all drawing from what limited information that's available to us. And many of the occasions, we're operating and speaking from afar. We are trusting the media. And speaking of trusting the media, I wanted to ask many of you out there, I know how I feel, and it's sort of a cakewalk when dealing with the, quote, media, and over the years, many have described it as the fourth arm of government, the media. And then we also talk about the fifth arm of government, which is business, enterprises, or the great big companies. And then we have our elected officials, which is part of the government, and then you have the military, whatever. But the media, I'd like to hear from some of you out there. There seemed to be a trend, and especially in this state, I can't speak for others, but I find myself a little concerned, and I'll tell you why. And what my concerns are is that today you would see me on this TV and doing a story, and there's Paul Smith is the reporter. And Paul Smith has been privy to quite a bit of information from me, and I'm very careful as to how much I let reporters have and know because of this one factor, which seems to be quite common and presents itself more times than many now. And it requires for an intelligent person to ask, if the public, I'm a watchdog, if the public trusts me and does not trust the media and call me and provide information, or state workers or federal workers or police officers or firemen call me and give me a tip on some wrongdoings in a certain matter, and then I, as the, quote, watchdog, contact the media, and then I present that information with the conditions that, thinking the media is going to protect that individual's that's giving me the information, going to protect them. And if there's retaliation, there would be a follow-up, a story of, or, you know, to say that you're retaliating for this person. You don't really know. We won't name. But here's the problem. I find myself quite uncomfortable now and having to really do some soul searching, and it's based on this. It's triggered by this common practice, it seems, that today, while I'm talking to Paul Smith, conveying to Paul Smith, the reporter, what it is that you, the informant or source or public person who wants to remain anonymous, information, Paul Smith gets the opportunity to go meet you because it's under the conditions of anonymity and you're going to be anonymous and it's understood. But then next week you turn on the TV and there's Paul Smith working for the mayor as a public relations person for the mayor, or the public relations person for the university, or the public relations person for the DOT, or the public relations. So should I be concerned, or is that just a natural reflex of being paranoid? I'd like to hear from you and ask if you what's your opinion on that? Is there any reason to be worried? And is it something that's not set well? Or is it even worth asking? But I find myself in that predicament, precariously perched on breaching of trust on the part of the public with me. So I really, and I mean really, it's troublesome. And so when we have this, we go through the gyrations of, well, we'll black his face out. We'll cover his face. We'll shoot a shadow. We'll put a hat over his head, and we'll change his voice, slow down his voice or her voice, the source or the state worker, the city worker, or the federal worker. And then, as I say, we've gone through that, and then next week we find that reporter now is working for the government. So brings a lot of questions. When did that individual reporter person decide to employ himself or become an employee of the city government or the state government or the state agency? When? And if so, did that person hold back on the coverage of the story? Now, I know this will probably piss a lot of people off, and just to even inquire or ask the question. But it's worthwhile asking, because I find myself, when you have a gaggle of people coming to you saying, we want to participate and we want to be whistleblowers and we trust you, but that trust is blown to you know what, when in fact the reporter gets an opportunity, gets in it, and then you turn on the TV and there's a reporter working for the mayor. I just noticed that Andrew Pereira, really nice guy, but it's not about people. It's about the actions. And to see, I read a piece in the paper where he was being quoted as saying that he's getting up in age now and he wanted to be into politics. And something to that effect. So I first became aware of this troublesome practice with the Hanneman administration. Can't think of the reporter's name, but as it come to me. And I was feeding him information, and in turn, never knowing that he was actually already employed because he never disclosed that. He was working for the mayor. So there's a list of them. And that is my question. And is it calling into question their integrity? Or does it call into question, or does it invite the opportunity to ask these? Is it something that a smart person would ask? If I give you this information, Mr. or Mrs. Reporter, then how far can I trust you? Because now that you know that who the whistleblowers are, who have approached me, who speaks out in this agency, and then you go and work for that agency, is it calling into question the integrity of the person or the reporter? Or is it just smart business to asset and become concerned with it, because there's no agreement between myself and the reporters? So it's a lot to think about, and so things have to, for me, have to change, because human beings are human beings, and I'm not to say that we'll stray off the path and accuse anybody of being unethical, but it surely begs the question, and only a fool would participate in this practice and not inquire, not ask. Only stupid people do that, and I don't pretend to be stupid. So 524-1080 is the number if you have a comment on that or an observation I'd like to hear. And in the second hour, we're going to have the ocean safety people on the show, and we're going to be talking about some of the things that you as citizens can do, not only to help other people that are in predicaments of whether life-threatening situations, but even yourself. Who knows, at any given time, you or I can be needed to be plucked from the water if we go to the beaches by the lifeguards and what have you. And what kind of resources do they have? And we have a number of drownings, and are there some things that can improve on that? So we're going to be talking to them about that, and shark bites and all of that. So that's where we'll be going with this today. But anyway, that is quite going back to the reporters and what have you. So here's some of my real life experiences. So you get there's a Curtis Lam who works for the city planning and permitting. Curtis Lam was an employee of the newspapers, and I've always dealt with him and you know, shared information and talk. But he's now public relations person for the Department of Planning and Permitting. His concerns is he is to get he works for the government now directly, and he handles that department. So I call up, and in the old days there was no problem with calling in and talking to the employees. Today it's don't call them, you call me, and then I'll get what you need. Can you imagine? So these are things that the fourth arm of government needs to check, just like the policeman shouldn't take gifts from certain people or stores or from anybody in the community, you know, and because it could, quote, corrupt them, or could the person giving may want some favor. What do reporters, what is their set of rules or canons or things, a moral list of things that they should or shouldn't do? Should one of them be going back and working for the state agency? Should there be a cooling off period? Now, I know there is quite a bit to be asked. You know, well, the person in this economy could be bad. Well, I understand all of that. And state agencies provide benefits. And I understand in this market here, the media, sometimes it's not the best paying jobs, but it's a job. But again, which comes first? The trust of the community in that role that you play as media, or the individual who needs a job? Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your call. Thank you.
Oh, hi. Well, you're on a topic that it was bugging me this week when I heard Pereira, that reporter.
Mm-hmm.
He's leaving, and he was on a talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, wow, you know, well, sounded real. I mean, the moderator gave him high regards and, you know.
Oh, he is, well, let me, he
no,
is
no,
one,
anyway,
he's one fine person as far as all of that.
Yeah, he was a good reporter, but, you know, mm-hmm. working for the mayor, but I didn't, when I read that article,
mm-hmm.
oh, he looked up to Cordero, like, whoa, what, oh my gosh, I said, he's going to get, you know, blindsided, hopefully he still would be an honest reporter, because, I just shook my head when I read that article.
Yeah, that's a good question. And what happened once you were inside the tent with the mayor?
Exactly. No, it's just his comment. Well, I don't know if it was taken out of context, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the reporter kind of just made up whatever the reporter did. But, you know, I don't think they would. They quoted him, right? They interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard him, he admires him and blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. I kind of lost all my kind of respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he's going to be, I mean, well, maybe he'll get a better job. He'll learn more about politics. But to learn from Cordwell, I go like, give me a break.
Yeah, you know? And So it raises some concerns with you.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly. So the way you're saying it, it's so well said. I just get tongue twisted all the time when I get on the radio, but I understand you fully as to your expression of what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. At least somebody out there is thinking the same. I'm sure you get a lot of people, but you know they're not going to voice their opinion. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel I'm more loyal to the people that
the people, right?
And so I have to, whether it pisses every one of them off in the media and they never look at me again. I'm not here to be popular, be loved, and be that's Carol Cox,
yeah,
you know.
I gotta give credit. Oh my gosh, it's not easy what you're doing, but I thank you so much. And you know, podcast. Radio program Paul Ipo.
Mm-hmm.
Her last comment, I think she asked Poca about the federal court of government.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't we like the boss? So something she mentioned that we should divorce them, and I said, you know, you're exactly right. Cause that's what I was thinking too, but it's not the way it is.
Well, that raises many questions. I mean, you know, they make rulings, and we are a nation of laws, right?
Yeah, you would think so, yeah. You would think so, yeah. Like, the people is the one, you know. But that's why the people are not being smart. They're voting the same people in, and, it's getting more disastrous each election, you know,
and not only do we vote them back in, and that's the great danger. All we need, politics is almost like shaking hand with a person that has a cold. You're clean and you're healthy, and you shake his hand, and then voila, you're contaminated. Now I use that analogy because all you need to do is vote in one, and let's say David Ige. So then, guess what David Ige does? That cold, the shaking that hand. He then brings in.
Appointed in him and his wife, actually.
Who does he bring in? McCartney. He brings in all the old school dogs from way back. Iwasi, right?
Yeah.
And it's like.
I love Mr. Fossey, but God rest his soul. But you know, I don't like that now. Whatever is going on, so.
but don't give up. But I thank you for sharing that because for me, I owe the loyalty is to the people that trust me.
Oh, I know that. That's why I bothered, not bothered, but I made an effort. I was charging my battery. But I said, I got to go because you're on key, on point today about Pereira. I mean, I like that guy too. You know, so-called one of the old-timers.
Yeah, well, what drove it home to me was I did, in fact, get two calls, one from another reporter that had gone to the state, and I kind of, okay. And then someone calls and says, you know, I remember giving him some information, and, bro, what are you doing? What he said was, bro, what are you doing to make sure that today we come to you, the public come to you, public workers or whoever come to you and give you information, and then you are supposed to insulate, and you give it to them, and then they in turn next week. And then not only that, they're saying how they admire the same guy.
They tell the reporter what to say, and you know, they're just like they're slaves. So
right,
not the people slave. I know. But at least you had your airtime. A lot of things because you were on the front line. You know, when things happen, I see you on television.
Mm-hmm.
At least that station, I give them credit for putting you on.
Oh yeah, well they do, but again, it's something I had to address because I don't want to leave people in the lurch thinking that there's some compromise or some I'm reckless with their trust.
Right.
Because I believe in what I do to be very important, and I can't address every issue in the state.
That's for sure.
But if I can address one.
Nobody wants to do what you want to do. Oh, my gosh. That's a problem, too. I mean, we're all cowards. It's not easy to fight the, you know, system.
Yeah.
Someone like you.
Yeah, like one guy said, what good feeling is it about being standing up, speaking on behalf of people, push them over, and then where you were standing, someone is taking your place in an instance. He says, what's the incentive to get involved, right? So we're, I think human nature is, there's both sides of it. There's always going to be good people, regardless of the jeopardy that they're placed in. Right is right, and it feels better to be right than to be wrong or to be on the other side. Something about that, right? That nervous feeling, that sick feeling of being, cheating other people, lying and stealing and robbing an entire community rather than, you understand.
Yeah, but, well, a lot of them, they just don't make the time to go out and vote.
Mm-hmm.
I always go out there and tell you know how important it is, and they know what's going on, but I said, that's why, you're intelligent, you know what's going on, so vote the right people in, make a change. But, they're all small business people, so I'm sure they can take time out, you know, just leave an hour earlier or whatnot, but for some reason, they're so reluctant. That's why the voting,
And people need to run for office, think about running themselves rather than they feel that they don't have it, when in fact this is representative government.
Thing. It's so, a commitment.
Yeah.
So my hat's off to you to be where you are, you know.
All righty. Well,
thank you.
Thank you. I'll start wearing a hard hat.
Okay, you're going to be Abe Lincoln.
Oh, no, I can't be Abe.
No, I mean, you know, I'm environmental, you know, because you're always there,
I'm always thinking about what it is to be right. This country is built on some bad moments, but there's some good moments about this country.
I know, I'm so sorry that things happen, you know, the things that happen to you. I cannot believe how the generation has become, the system. I don't know if I was, you know, like an ostrich too. I was younger then, but I don't think people were that cruel, you know, that vicious or whatever.
Well, I'm always reminded that there are people that have paid the ultimate price, whether it's on the front line fighting for freedom or speaking out for women's rights, and people have been killed just speaking out, you know, and or just workers have been massacred just asking. So for my little debt that I'm paying is, it's chump change compared to what has already transpired and who has lost so much and ostracized for speaking out, you know. How about a Jane Fonda? This was a country supposedly of freedom of speech. And whether we like her or what she said or whatever side we were on or who cares, there were atrocities taking place in that. And who is she now? I mean, she's one of the most hated people there is by certain people, right?
I don't know. She might be hated, but, boy, she's sure making the millions with all her exercise and, you know, celebrity status. So.
And look good at 80-something, right? What is she in the 70s or 80s?
I have no idea. Forget her. I'm not too involved in movie stars anymore. That's all you see on television. Even I get so tired, I just select my programming.
Yeah, and
I cannot handle the news nowadays. It's all celebrity. Is that what they're teaching their kids, to be like a celebrity?
Right.
All false and no character, no values. No, I mean, I'm sure there are good ones too, but.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just shaking my head nowadays. Like, maybe I'm getting too older.
Well,
that's changed.
But, you know, how many people, going back to what you talked about earlier, people, the sacrifices and the payment that certain people were speaking of. I mean, there's a list of people that, and some of them that never made that list, that gave up the ultimate price, paid the ultimate price. And so, for me, it is kind of lonesome because in a world where everyone says, you better be careful. Can you imagine? You imagine if someone was at the bottom of a ravine that had fallen down and they got broken legs and you know you need to get down there to rescue them, and someone up on the ledge saying, well, I wouldn't go down there if I was you. What happened to him might happen to you. You imagine? It's such a lonely path.
Well, you know, as an individual, you make your choices there,
Right.
It's easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of them do try to save whoever, and they end up dying. You know, they both end up dying.
Right. Well,
so
that at least...
I think if you have that common sense at that time,
mm-hmm.
and your gut feeling, you will do exactly what you want to do, whether you end up dying or... surviving this situation.
Right.
So, yeah, it's hard. It's a hard call.
Yeah.
So only time will tell, but I know, I mean, everybody said, do it now, but I don't know. I got to think about it sometimes. Okay, anyway, I do thank you, for your comments this morning, because that's what I, you know, was thinking about it too. When I heard him on the radio, I said, oh, wow, good for him. He's moving up, because I didn't know KITV.
Mm-hmm.
Had a changeover. I guess a new owner. I think that's what he mentioned to the moderator. You know, I mean, we don't know everything. So that's what when we, you know, wherever we're listening or looking or hearing, we learn and we pick up some information, right?
Yeah, but if
and
when
right
you
after that, he was in a newspaper, and mm-hmm. I read that article because I just heard him on the radio. I didn't like it. It just distorted everything, you understand.
All right.
But anyway, okay, thank you
Alrighty.
So much for your programming.
Thank you. Aloha.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Mahalo. Yeah, in regards to Andrew Pereira, the man, you won't find a better person on the planet. It's always, and professional. It's just that those questions that came about when Mayor Caldwell is out there, and we know his policies and his practices. And in fact, talking about being a movie star, everything there is now, he's showing up in it. You know, see, he wants to be a part of it because it's becoming election time, you see. So he knows that indelibly he'll etch in your minds, no matter what the subject is, Kirk Caldwell Mayor. See, you're going to remember that. That's going to flow off your lips. So when you go to the voting booth, you're going to do the same thing. It's just a natural reflex. So he's pimping you. But it's okay. I mean, many of you wouldn't know what it means to be pimped. But let's just put it this way. He's harsh during the 8 hours of daylight and just a smooth operator when it comes to little issues. Remember, we have a rail that many people, regardless what we see, are uneasy, and he's on that side. And many of things he's now saying, he's questioning all of these things. So, and, you know, the environmental concerns and spending the money and the planning and permitting, who he put in the zoning and some of these buildings that are going up. Some of them are outside of the zoning. The authority of DPP, but there are a lot of other activities that are involved in. He didn't really speak out on the water, Board of Water Supply issues. He hadn't spoken out about the Red Hill thing, so playing it safe. But, you know, there's a lot to be asked. When a person on one day has the public's trust, and then the next day, who is watching and shepherding the mayor and reporting on the mayor or the governor or whatever, and then the next thing you know, voila, he's on their staff. It's just something to be asked, and if the reporters are not concerned with that, you know, go ahead and be childlike and get pissed at me for asking it publicly, but it's okay. I respect you guys for professionals, but on the other hand, when people are coming to me and then I go to you and give you that information, I deserve some kind of assurances that, but when you go and work for the mayor and all of these issues and they're controversial and reporting something has, and again, do you think the mayor would be as inviting and entertaining the employment of a reporter who is reporting the negatives on them or on him or her? You see, I mean, that's the other thing. If it is true that Caldwell, really, you can just, as long as you're reporting the facts and the truth, then it wouldn't be any reason to be concerned that there's some, that the reporter's integrity has drifted to the Far Side. I don't know, but it is worth asking. So, thank you, caller, for waiting. Go ahead with your comments or questions.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Having been to the council many, many times, state legislature, few, but many meetings, Machiavelli said that you should bring your enemies as close to you as you can. And this is exactly, in my opinion, what is happening. And the people about whom we are speaking are incorrigible, unconscionable. I do not see them operating at the same level of ethics and morality as we do. I have seen them smile, tap me on the shoulder, how are you, etc. And I've seen a person who, through this endearment, now supports them, and once upon a time, he was against them. So, if you look at the revolving door, Manahan, Menor, Pine, up, down from the state legislature, and going up is Harimono, Romy Cachola, Dela Cruz. It's just a revolving door. And I agree with you 100%. Perhaps just a small anecdote. Ivan Kwan approached me and wanted to shake my hand. And he was then the president of HART. I put my hands behind me and turned away. Horimoto did the same thing, approached me. I put my hands behind me and walked away. I have no respect whatsoever for them. Now, the people who don't deal with them, obviously they are not aware, empirically aware of what they're like.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch before the gavel goes down to start a meeting, and then the gavel goes down to end the 2 or 3 hour meeting, and you watch after that and you see the smooching, you wonder how in the hell can they ask the question? It's almost, Corey, it's Kabuki theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how. I'm on the point of agitation and control to help Pono, because everything that you say is absolutely true through my own experiences.
Yeah, you know, being careful not to suggest that it's evil doings. It's the nature of the beast that many of us not aware of, but my observations are on a news station, let's say, the person comes in the morning, he has a story or an assignment, or he generates his own, or she generates her own. So imagine something flares up, and that person wants an immediate response or needs an immediate response. So it's 3 o'clock in the evening or 4 o'clock. And I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to share some of my observations. So it's good to be cordial with the council people or places. And so you, not to say that you're going to trade off honesty, but you're smooching and what have you. And so you need a soundbite to make that story complete, because that's what the company's policy is, just certain elements in the story, right?
Yes, this concept of evil, there is an abuse of evil,
mm-hmm.
whereby some will use religious terminology, religious dogma, using the word evil. And the reason is they don't want any deliberation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want any discussion. If you say they're evil, it's black, white, good, bad, and they have succeeded in framing the argument, which has very little to do with the solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the media has some answers, can hold a lot of people accountable, and the noose, they tie a loose knot in the noose, right?
Yes.
Always there's an escape for them of cordiality, and in fact, I believe the news stations could be more impactful and more heavy-hitting.
Absolutely.
Than they are, because, you know, I mean, for example, this Lori Carquina with Environmental Services, how many flobs We have trash not being picked up. We have sewage spilling. We have, you know, just on and on and on and on. And nobody asks the question, Mayor, when are you going to hold this person accountable? You let the chief of police, let a few officers act unruly and see the first discussion. Well, you know, it goes to the top. Goes to the top.
Right? Have the city agencies, the head of departments, zoning, transportation, whatever it might be, come before the council.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they rehearse the questions.
Yeah. You know, and I'm speaking of something that occurred, the potholes in H1 freeway going westbound at Pearl City there, you know, I went through and filmed it, driving in and filmed it, and showing the potholes, and they said, oh, well, you know, we stopped early, and we're going to come back in November and do it. Well, November is here, and guess what? Still potholes.
Let me interject this. Behind you 100%, I hold you accountable for the truth, as I do with everybody, and you should be very proud of your position. And for me, and this is philosophical, but intellect, emotion, imagination, and intuition proves that I exist. And if I do the best I can for the common good of the people, then I exist as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I put you in the same category. I haven't been hit up against the side of my head yet.
Yeah, well,
thank you so very much, Mr.
Well, if you've experienced a moment of injustice and when you were deserving of something as it's your natural rights, then it's like being hit upside the head. It sticks with you. When you've been violated, it sticks with you, period.
It's not difficult for me to testify or to act, not at all, because being there in office alone, among 50 people, and the only one there is not myself, not all the time.
Hold on one second here. Hold on. Caller, good morning. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I guess you're talking about the Andy Guerrero situation.
No, I'm talking, yeah.
It smells like dead fish. Hired or accept employment by the person or organization investigating. what can you say?
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. And who knows what the factors are, but my concern is with, I'm that clog in the wheel that between you and them, I want to assure the listeners that when you come to me, I'm going to be extra careful, and we're not playing secrets where we got nuclear weapons and all of that and those kinds of secrets, but your trust, when you come to me and say, I want to speak out about this and inform the public about this fraud and abuse within government, and I trust that I can tell you and you will keep my name out of it, and yes, I will speak to the reporter to confirm that, but I want to remain, but then the reporter goes and works for the agency that's committing the act, that you follow. So I hope it's not about Andrew Pereira. If whatever he wants to do, that's between him and the fence post. I don't really care. I'm working from that point backwards. I want to assure you, the listeners, that I have not given any and will not compromise that and will be alert to that now.
It sounds like a book on how to muzzle your opponents or detractors.
Who is it? Roosevelt spoke about having inside the tent? One of the guys. I don't profess to be one of the guys that remember all the quotes, but anyway. Well, thank you. All right. Okay, Richard, go ahead.
Yes, well, for me, it's never, or very seldom at least, an ad hominem attack. I do not attack the person. I disagree with the process. However, they enact the process.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do as much limited for me research, I've come to certain conclusions whereby I don't think in terms of the rail, I'm going to end, but how much proof do you need to prove that this was a catastrophe, that this is the most expensive project in the history of the state. And it was never about moving people. It was about TOD, Transit-Oriented Development.
Here's an email that I got regarding the subject of trash has been bandied about. This is the email text message. This is not a new thing. It's been in place for over years. Weight tonnage been a problem for a long time. If you listen to the two-way radio, they let you know the scale is out, and they know the time the scale DOT goes to launch, and half the time DOT waves city trucks by. One person's story got published. So anyway, the mayor, there are so many things that this mayor has failed on and so short, and we're all focusing on the rail, but that should be enough right there. But then, who knows? Maybe he'll, with this new hire, all answers, everything will come clean now, and we'll, you just never know, right?
I just thank you. All I can say, and I'm going to stop now, is this. I trust you. Thank you, Mr. Cox.
All right, thank you. So, guys, this is, again, I'm not this keeper of Andrew Pereira or any other reporter or anything. I don't really care, and if, as I say, if they never do a story with me again, honesty is honesty. It's just that simple. You know, this is not a game. And when you got to know, you wanted to know what is really a struggle about what I do. And now this is, I could pick up and walk out of this any day now. So it's not, don't feel sorry for me. Don't think that I'm being irrational and I can't say, well, this is enough. I'm going to go fishing. Screw it. I could do that. But being that I'm here, there's a liability. So let me tell you, the greatest pain is not looking over my shoulder if someone's going to attack me or retaliate or do whatever. The greatest struggle is to have someone to invest in you, trust, that will believe in you and pick up. And this is a burden for me. I wouldn't invite any of you to do it. Honestly, because every person you treat it like it's the biggest secret in the world, because that person could get fired. That person being fired, that means his children are impacted, and you don't want to see what it is to get caught up in the mafia-driven government agencies that will grind your ass to ashes, work you to death, treat you like you're a criminal, and then in turn spit you out. And all you were doing was speaking up on behalf of the community, saying, there's smoke, there's fire, there's, you're the alarmist, the person coming to me. So the burden is not letting that down and always making sure that I don't misstep and let that person's name out or that phone number or what have you. That's not to say they don't go back looking for the rat in the system. And some things are quite easy to figure out if you're working in that agency who it was, because only certain people are privy to the information. So it's a great burden. And just sharing with you, it's self-anointed, self-appointed, and so don't go away feeling sad for me. I did this on my own. I do this to myself, and I know that I can, any given day or moment, step out of it. But I wouldn't encourage any of you to do it, because there's such a burden. You got to trust everybody and trust no one, if you understand. Even the person giving you the information, you got to get it qualified to make sure that what they're telling you is the truth and not being manipulated. And then you take that and you, once you've vetted that, so to speak, you go. And then you don't have a media source, but you have relationship with the media. You call them up, and they assign you a reporter. The reporter then takes that. And let me tell you, there's nothing more leave you with a nervous feeling than to have worked with a reporter today and then see him tomorrow on working for the government or whatever, Just so it's kind of a burdensome practice. And again, I share that with you, and if any of you out there in the media that interpret this other than what I'm speaking, then shame on you. And your actions are not off limit either, especially when we gather around the TV morning, noon, and night before we go to bed. Believe it or not, our trust is so great in the media that the first thing we do, just how well we trust the media, the first thing we do in the morning is get that paper and get that hot cup of coffee. So that's our trust with the print media. Or we turn on the TV. That's the first thing. So they're in our lives at that. And then when we go to bed, we want to watch the evening news before we call it a day. So you're there. The media is there in our minds, in our lives, and shaping us and preparing us for what's to come tomorrow morning. Or telling us in the morning what's going to come later that day. And then giving us your opinions and stacking it. So we need honesty. We need truth from the part of what's being generated by the, quote, media. And that's why I say this is, I call it the Carol Cox Show, but I'm just trying to share with you some of my observations and frustrations. So anyway, we'll be back in the next hour. I'm going to have Shane Enright and with the city and county of Honolulu and talking about ocean safety. And boy, you talk about an agency. You don't know they exist, but boy, when you're going down that third time or that you fall off your board and get hurt and they're there to pull you out of the water or what have you, then, or the shark bites, they're the ones who have to go out there and post the signs. But we'll be right back, and hang in there. Aloha.
About Minnie the Moocher. She was a red-hot hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest, toughest rail. But Minnie had a heart as big as a hay whale. Howdy, howdy, ho.
Howdy, howdy, ho.
Howdy, howdy,
ho. Howdy, howdy, ho.
Loved him though he was cokey. He took her down to Chinatown. He showed her how to kick the gong around.
Showed her how to kick the gong around.
Howdy ho!
Howdy ho!
Howdy ha!
Howdy ha!
What a weevil!
What a weevil!
Howdy ho! He gave her things that she was needing. He gave her a home built of gold and steel, a diamond car with a platinum wheel. Waddy woody way,
waddy woody way.
Oh baby,
oh baby.
Wanna be with you,
wanna be with you.
Howdy ho,
howdy ho.
He gave her his townhouse and his racing horses. Each meal she ate was a dozen courses. She had $1 million worth of nickels and dimes, and she sat around and counted them all a million times. Howdy, howdy,
howdy, howdy.
Oh, many,
oh, many.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Another day here in Hawaii. So I told you before the close of the other hour, first hour, that I'd have Shane Enright on, and she's with the City and County of Honolulu, Oahu Safe, Ocean Safety Division. And folks, you know, I said last week, or I think it was, we would have complete chaos if we didn't have the police, the fire department, and the ocean safety, because, man, when you need them, you need them now. Can you imagine being at the beach and riptide grab you, and then you call in and they put you on hold? Well, this is a government agency that don't put you on hold. They have to be right there, because the moment is important and your loved one is in trouble. So we're going to talk with Shane, and we'll learn something about ocean safety, what you can do, what you should do, how to avoid getting in trouble. The key to safety is just not putting yourself in predicaments. If you know you're from Mississippi and you can't swim that well, don't go to pipeline and try to surf until you learn how to do it properly. So without delay, I'm going to bring in Shane. Shane, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for accepting my invitation here, because I try to digest some of these thoughts about shark bites and all of that. And I thought, why not just bring in and ask you guys to come? So what is Oahu Ocean Safety Division, and where is it found, and who's under it, and can you give us?
Great question. Everybody knows the police department, of course, Honolulu Police Department, Honolulu Fire Department. That's our police officers and our firefighters. But then you got us, and we're the Honolulu Emergency Services Department. And within that department, which is a city organization, we have the Honolulu Emergency Medical Services, which, of course, is all your paramedics and your emergency medical technicians, your ambulance services that run all the 911 calls. And then you have the Ocean Safety and Lifeguard Services Division, which is all your city lifeguards, all the towers that you see at the beaches, and the rescue craft operators, all the jet ski operators.
Mm-hmm. So how many people do you folks employ?
On the ocean safety side, we have about 175 part-timers, and then we have about 50 or so 150 full-timers and about 50 part-timers.
Mm-hmm.
And they cover about 200 miles of shoreline around Oahu, and they work from 9 to 5:30. And they're the ones that, if you get into trouble, they're going to be responding. Now, ocean safety is your primary responders to anything that goes on in the ocean, any sort of ocean rescues. And the thing about lifeguards specifically is that when you call 911, you call in your emergency. So police, fire, EMS, they get somewhat of a heads up of what they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
But when lifeguards are on the beach, they're just on alert. They're looking. They're making sure, is everyone okay? Is something going on? They're looking for that person that you mentioned earlier that may not be in the right spot at the right time.
Right.
So they're kind of always on edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes think about, if that was my job, the anxiety that must be. They always look so calm, and lifeguards kind of get stereotyped as just being laid back. But
mm-hmm.
anything but that. They always have to be on edge, because anything can happen, and the ocean works so quickly.
Mm-hmm. I recall an occasion being at Yokohama, and mm-hmm. you know sometimes how it breaks in there and can be deadly. Well, I observed a gentleman who was trying to swim, and he was frustrated because the lifeguards were telling him it wasn't safe and please come out of the water. And he got thrashed around, and as a result, he actually filed a complaint saying that the lifeguards roughed him up. I was there, and I gave a statement that was completely contrary to the truth. But is that common practice, or is that a common occurrence that you get people resist the because they don't see a gun and a badge on the lifeguard?
Oh, yes, all the time, actually. And it happens around the entire island. It doesn't have to be where there's big surf or big shore break. You know, our job is to warn people. Majority of the position is preventative measures.
Mm-hmm.
We pride ourselves on preventing rescues. And it's actually, if we do have a rescue, we sometimes think of it as a failure, because what happened that led to that? Now, obviously, lifeguards are only in so many places, and a lot of our rescues occur where we don't have a lifeguard tower.
Mm-hmm.
So when people don't listen to us, we can't stop them. When we have huge surf, we can only advise them, warn them, tell them it's not a good idea to go into the water. But they can still go. There is no law banning them.
Right.
Unless they have a tsunami watch or a scare, then HPD can shut off the beaches and close them. But until that happens, everybody has their own right to go in.
So to accurately describe to the listeners, you have this cadre of this force of lifeguards who really don't, they're there preventing and advising against subjecting yourself to dangers, but they have no authority to stop you and arrest you, but they have to call the police. But does that not complicate their lives, because they're already on edge looking, and anything can develop, right?
Right.
Not to mention a shark shows up or anything could happen.
Yeah. So for that point, exactly, if somebody goes into the water against lifeguards' advice and they get into trouble, now they're not only risking their own lives and safety, they're risking the lifeguard safety as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know our lifeguards are extremely strong swimmers, but I don't care how strong you are, sometimes that surf is just so big and so dangerous that nobody should be going in. Now, and then you have sharks. Now, we put up the signs, we alert people, we let them know. But if you get bitten by a shark or, you know, something occurs, the lifeguards are the ones swimming in and trying to get you out of the water. So
mm-hmm.
we do our best to let people know about every situation that's going on, whether it's jellyfish, shark sightings, big surf, strong currents. But, again, at the end of the day, a lot of people choose to take a risk. Unfortunate.
That must be a frustrating position when you know the dangers, and I'm not going to belittle some of the tourists, but some people are just going to be, they're motivated, they're on vacation, and they're just going to go anyway, and not realizing that lifeguard knows how that water changes in minutes and the current changes, and that's what his training is, or her training is. They're there. They're not ignorant people of the ocean. And
yeah,
it must be frustrating to watch you don't go in. How many warnings on an average a year do you guys give? And this doesn't sound important, but how many warnings? Tens of thousands.
Really? I mean, if you think about a beach filled with people and we're going down back and forth on our ATVs, or we're going on the bullhorn and we're just talking to people, it's constant. Nowadays, the lifeguards say they just don't stop making preventative actions, warning people about what's going on. Because they're watermen and women, like you were mentioning. These are veterans. They love their job. They love helping people. But they don't want to see anybody get into trouble. They don't want to get to that point.
Right.
So it's just a constant every day. They're not just sitting back, relaxing in the tower.
They're mindful of everything. They're looking. It looks as though they're just sitting there. Someone one day says, why don't you get off your butt and get out there and swim? Yeah, but if you go out in the water and just start swimming around, you won't be able to look from the observation tower, nor will you be able to communicate with the guy on shore to direct you or alert you to an emergency.
Right, and so people should know. So for the incidences that happen that are not inside of lifeguard towers,
they go through the 911 system.
Mm-hmm.
So it will go to fire, and the fire department will then spawn that call off to OSHA safety dispatch,
mm-hmm.
who will then either alert most likely the mobile response unit. So we do have lifeguard trucks with attached jet skis, and those lifeguards will then drive to the closest area that they can access the ocean and launch the jet ski. And then
mm-hmm.
within a couple minutes, they can be at that person. But then again, a couple minutes when you're not a strong swimmer could mean the difference between life and death.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the Makaha shark bite occurred, mm-hmm. that incident, there was a piece in the Evening News with Brian Kealana, who was mm-hmm. a former ocean safety captain.
Mm-hmm.
And in that piece, he expressed concerns that ocean safety resources are stretched very thin, he said.
Mm-hmm.
That they have staffing shortages and that they need more jet skis. So, on all the shores, southwest, east, and how many jet skis do you have, and what numbers do you have, and what coverage these jet skis, what miles? You said 200 miles of beach, but also, what is your budget, all in, if you could speak to that?
Sure. So, ocean safety, we pride ourselves on, we cover 200 miles of shoreline. Even if there's no lifeguard tower there, we're cut into four districts, and we're going to respond to wherever the emergency may be. Now we have about a half dozen rescue watercraft. Those are jet skis, what people know as jet skis. And we have the operators. And we cover from 9 to 5:30. Could we use more lifeguards? Yes. Is there a perfect number of, is there ever going to be enough lifeguards? Probably not. That's to rely heavily on the community
mm-hmm.
from the south, because we're just never going to be everywhere.
Right.
But we have a lot of good support from the community, Brian Kealana, a lot of the watermen, the professional surfers. They really get it and understand how important lifeguards are. So we do see sort of an uptick in how people are recognizing the importance. And we hope to sort of, no pun intended, but ride that wave.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully get this division a little bit more respect.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, respect. And speaking of respect, your lifeguards, can you share with us what kind of training and what are some of the basic requirements when to get and become a lifeguard?
Well, it's difficult. I did the run, swim, run, and the basics just to get into becoming a lifeguard. And you definitely have to be an extremely strong swimmer. You have to be able to run. You have to be strong. And that's just to get in. And then you have to have no fear, because you have to be able to jump off of cliffs into the water. We all hear about the incidents that happen at the blowhole, spitting caves. Well, our guys aren't swimming from shore, they have to jump off themselves. And it takes, like I mentioned earlier, you have to be a waterman or a waterwoman. You have to know the ocean. You have to understand it. You have to want to be in the water even on your days off.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 20, 30 foot surf sometimes on the west and north facing shores. Extremely powerful, strong sets coming in, pounding you one after another, and you have to be able to hold your breath. And our lifeguards, no matter their age, every year go through an annual recertification,
mm-hmm.
a physical. And if they don't pass that physical, they're not allowed back onto the beach. So it doesn't matter if you're 20, 30, 40, in your 50s. We even have one guy in his 60s. They're going to pass that physical because your life depends on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a matter of life and death. But so the you spoke earlier about time and schedule, 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
How come the lifeguards haven't expanded their hours and from sunrise to sunset, let's say? Because when they leave or when they arrive at the stand, there's people already in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And when they leave, there's people in the water. How, and is there anything to address that, or what have been some of the problems with addressing that?
It's something we're looking into.
Oh, okay.
Definitely. It's actually something new we're looking into. More so, as I said, because we're sort of have a bit of momentum. I can't say when it may occur, but it's definitely an issue, for lack of better words, that we know needs to be addressed. You're right. Our lifeguards show up at 9 o'clock and there's 100 people already on the beach. And imagine you're that lifeguard that has been watching those people all day long, and then at 5:30, you have to leave knowing that family isn't really doing a good job watching their child.
Right.
You know, and now you're not there to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to go home to your own family, and you're not getting paid anymore. So you got to go.
And
reality.
Once they leave at 5:30, their shift change. Who then becomes responsible for that area as for responding to an emergency?
At that point, it's just a 911 response. Somebody sees somebody get into trouble, and then it's the fire department who does have that.
Is there any studies or review of how many of these drownings or major incidents have occurred during those after hours?
Not hard facts that at least I'm aware of. I know that we are speaking with like the Honolulu Fire Department and seeing what they may be responding to after hours.
Okay.
But not so much.
Mm-hmm.
Something though that we need to look into kind of goes with the overall education and preventative.
That is only, they're not there preventing the fire department because they don't have the manpower.
Right.
So they're reactionary. They're reacting to calls, correct?
Right, exactly. We just had a really big call actually about a couple months ago. A lifeguard, it was about 6:30 in the morning, and he was checking out the surf because he was going to go surfing, and he noticed the lights and sirens coming in with HSD. So something was up. So he went, and it was at the blowhole, and he saw a guy in the water, and he was going down fast, and the lifeguard jumped in, and he rescued the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was uninjured, walked away. But it's those types of scenarios that make us think, make everyone just sort of think about what's most important here.
Yeah, I didn't want to miss this opportunity, and because these unsung heroes and what you're dealing with such a massive responsibility in what I observe to be almost minimal resources. 6 jet skis when we should have, in my opinion, when life and death with these big waves, double that at least. That's just my opinion. And I don't believe that the taxpayer would object to that, especially when our budget and our economy is driven by what? Recreation and tourism in the ocean. And if we don't address that, what my fear is as a citizen taxpayer for managing that is that the word will get out that some of our beaches, you know, how often do we want to pick up the paper and learn that on this island someone drowned, a tourist drowned? We could, as saving money and not hiring people or not buying equipment, and it comes back to bite us, so to speak.
And that's the bigger picture. Well, to that, let me just say, you hear about the drownings, of course, front page, top of the news, whenever it happens, but all the rescues, try to get the word out on those. And that ocean safety, it's a career. It's not a summertime job. These guys are dedicated, so they deserve the right pay, the right resources, and we do see it happening. It's not going to happen overnight, but we're hoping that with people like you, radio shows, getting the word out, that we can get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, if you went to a hospital and you just by chance learned that the brain surgeon makes $5.50 an hour, you'd be a little reluctant. So the same thing. Well, you ask a lifeguard how much you make. Oh, I think I make about $3 an hour when it comes down to it. You're going to be, well, what? So we should pay for the training, get better training, better equipment, just all of that, because there's so much. We talk about the economy and the tourist-driven part of it, but then losing a loved one is there's no price. And so you come here for recreation, you come here for tourism, or just even local people, too. I mean, there's a misconception that local people, they're local, so they know how to swim. A great many of them get in trouble, too, because they're not mindful. They don't watch. They overtax themselves. Do you guys see anything of concerns with that or the numbers?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's almost 50-50, actually, when you take a look at those numbers. And it's like what you said, it's just people taking the risks that are unnecessary. The social media, of course, playing a huge role in it, getting that perfect selfie, and then, you know, I mean, it makes me think about this one picture in particular that this couple went to Landbridge by Hanama Bay, and the lifeguards warned them not to go out there. And they went anyways, and they posted a picture, and it said, "Lifeguards warned us not to go, but we had to take this photo anyways."
And today they're missing.
No, fortunately they did. They're not missing, and they're okay.
No,
there's a great chance that they could have gone missing.
Yeah, and that side is treacherous. I've been there watching whales, and you better step back, because doesn't need an excuse. It just develops. And where did that one come from, you know? So you have to be careful. How many lifeguard stands do you have island-wide? And are there enough? Or if not, are they planning on putting more? And then what does it take to replace or increase the number?
We have 29 lifeguard towers. And lifeguard towers are great because they do give you that not quite a bird's eye view, but that level that you can sort of see across the entire beach shoreline and then into the water. But where it's going to really make an impact is the rescue watercraft. Because we're seeing more and more cases happening along the shoreline where people are going hiking. You know, we've noticed over the last couple of years a trend in what people like to do. You know, they don't want to go and hang out at Waikiki Beach and just relax anymore. They're looking for adventure. And so it's sort of like we need to be ready for that. They're going out to the Mokulua Islands out in Kailua, and they're going on to the backside, and they're jumping off. And so we got our rescue watercraft out there in Kailua a couple of years ago, which has made a huge difference. So it's going to be changing the mentality of it, looking at extending hours, looking at adding mobile responders. There has been talk about going on to the 911 system, but because it's not a 24-hour service, there's some implications there. But people should always remember that if you call 911 and it's ocean-related, to give the dispatchers that heads up. Because then they can alert that closest lifeguard. They have AEDs in their tower. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a visitor jogging behind the lifeguard towers along Waikiki Beach, and he collapsed and had a heart attack, and the lifeguards responded and brought him back, and he went home with his wife a week later. And it wasn't even ocean-related. But they are first responders.
So I've noticed a couple of things. I lived in Los Angeles and worked in Los Angeles and had the occasional work with the city fire lifeguards there, and they had state-of-the-art equipment. And I do remember a couple of them actually would come to Hawaii every year because they looked up to Hawaii's lifeguards as being the ultimate, the best in the world lifeguards. And was it Baywatch? Speaks to that. Well, so that being the case, what about the equipment? Do you think that it's all about the people, apparently, because the equipment is lacking, and anything, any comments on that?
Meaning
for example, state-of-the-art lifeguard stands. You know, why don't we have that kind of stuff? You go San Diego, you go L.A. and those areas. But we seem to have some things missing. Mm-hmm. And any idea?
Yeah. Well, again, it's that changing the mentality that lifeguards is not a summer job,
mm-hmm.
career, and our industries are relying on it.
Mm-hmm.
Our livelihoods rely on our lifeguards' ability to respond and rescue us.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when we have a great rescue, the person that was rescued is a little bit embarrassed.
Right.
He doesn't want to talk about it. And so you may or may not hear about these rescues. But, yes, it's going to take the community resources, the lifeguards, letting the lifeguards know that they are appreciated,
mm-hmm.
as well as that sound.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, assistant mentality, assistant to realizing that these are professionals. They're dedicated. They are the best in the world. We develop the rescue watercraft operations here. Guys like Brian Kehlana,
mm-hmm.
Mel Pu'u. Now those types of rescue crafts are used for big wave surfing, big wave competitions. Those are the guys that are out there if something is going to happen.
And it's taken over the world like a rash, because everywhere you see big wave surfing or just any water sport, they will have incorporated jet skis and state-of-the-art equipment and the radios and, you know, submerging. But you remember the recent sewage spill that shut down Waikiki. One of the reasons I was motivated to ask you guys to come in, I heard something that was absolutely enough to make me think, we got to bring some attention to these folks. These are good folks, and we don't even know it, meaning the lifeguards. And that was a situation where, you know, they had posted the signs on the beaches and telling everybody you couldn't go in because of possibility of sewage or presence of sewage. And you know, with sewage is associated bacteria, pathogens. And I heard one of the lifeguards says, well, even though we post a sign, we tell them don't go in. He says, do you think if one of them, they're out there swimming, do you think we're not going to go in and rescue them if one of them got it? He says, I'm going regardless.
Right.
And then I thought, wow. So this lifeguard has, all of them have been put in this predicament where the people are still there. They can't tell them not to go. But if they go, they got to jump in this sewage water to go rescue that person. And I thought, my goodness, that's things that people should know, that maybe we need to bring some attention to this, and maybe we need to give a little more money. Maybe we need to do something to enhance that workforce and their ability to be safer, and maybe changing the laws. You guys don't have authority, do you, to tell people? You've spoken to it that you can only ask them, but is there any authority in the lifeguard rules that, or the HRSs that allow a lifeguard to have any legal enforcement?
None. Absolutely no enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do their best to advise, warn, help people. They just should not go in because of whatever reason it might be. But
mm-hmm.
again, if that person goes in the water and that lifeguard's on duty and he or she gets into trouble,
mm-hmm.
it's their responsibility to go in. And, yes, it takes a very special person to risk their own lives. They have families at home, too.
Yeah, even after telling the person, don't go in, look, it's dangerous, it's riptides, it's currents, it's whatever, and they still go, and they get in trouble, now what, you know? And that person, that lifeguard, still will go, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
definitely, they will go. And people just don't, they don't always see it, because they may be watching the surf when there's a lull, and we see that often, you know, at Shark's Cove. We put up the tape. We tell people not to go out. We don't even have a lifeguard tower there, but we will do constant patrols when we have big surf driving up and down the North Shore. And if we see people getting out there wanting to take that picture, we'll go let them know. And, you know, the surf might be down, as you know, Carol, and then 15 minutes later, here comes a big set. They're on the rocks. There's nowhere for them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they get just shredded across that rocky reef.
Plucked off through the aha. Yeah, I know that feeling.
And we'll go in after them.
And you got to go in after them because you're, I don't know what the legal ramifications are or obligations, but if you're there and don't go in.
Right. No, we go. There is no not going.
I don't think the average citizen can appreciate being forced after you tell don't go there. And it'd be like the fireman telling someone, don't go back in the house. And people tend to respect the fireman not to go in, but it's just as deadly with a big wave smashing or sets coming in. And people tend to ignore that. It's a strange situation. But preventive measures, you guys post signs and you walk and talk and tell people. And your patrol, so you're up and down the beaches and what have you, doing that. But can you talk a little bit more about risk in the social media? What we know that, get that selfie. But
Yeah, well, you're waiting for that big wave to crash behind you, right? So your back is to the ocean, which is a huge no-no.
Right.
We tell everyone just to never turn your back on the ocean. Then, so you got your back to the ocean, you got your kid or your wife, and you're waiting to take that photo.
Right.
And most people are not strong enough swimmers, even if they're in, they're ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're in normal clothes. You might be in tennis shoes, your collared shirt, you know, because you're not even intending to go into the ocean, because you would never do that.
Right.
It's too big to go into the ocean. But you'll take that photo, and then you'll, you know, Instagram, and it's the Yelp. They tell people about sitting caves and how beautiful it is. YouTube. And there are some people, we live in a reality here. We know some people can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those people who don't have the background,
mm-hmm.
are not strong swimmers, don't understand the ocean, who see these photos, see these pictures, videos, and go out and try to do the same thing. Now, there's been some shifts. We're seeing that people are recognizing that they should put, hey, you know, there's a lot of risk here. A number of people have died here, but Facebook, Instagram, Yelp, again, those are, we need a whole section just to combat that in our department.
Right. You're listening to the Carol Cox Show. This is a discussion with Shane Enright, the spokesperson, and with the Oahu Ocean Safety Division. But, you know, Shane, talk about some of the high-risk areas around the island here. Where are you most likely to, or you would have concern with?
The main attractions
start
from China Walls by Manalua Bay in Hawaii Kai.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were just to go around that coastline, then you got Spitting Caves, which is in the back. I'm not giving out any secrets here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out in the back by Portlock area. A short little walk down, which is interesting because unfortunately we've had people die there, and there's actually plaques memorializing the people that drowned. But it's about a 60-foot jump. It's called Spitting Caves because the water sucks in and spits back out. It's extremely difficult to climb back up because the rocks are wet, obviously, and so that's the risk there. Now, if you can even get back to the rock, because there's a strong current that pulls you out, what people do in those situations is that they panic. When you panic, you swallow water. When you swallow water, it paralyzes your vocal cords, and sometimes you're unable to scream or yell for help, which takes me to, real quick, snorkeling and why we have drownings with snorkeling. It's our highest number. It's drowning related to snorkeling because people swallow water and they panic and they can't make any noises, and then they drown, unfortunately, usually a slow death because nobody knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that would, if you were to keep going around that coastline there on the east side, you'd hit Rock Ridge.
Right.
Again, one that you are trying to walk across, but surf is always crashing over. We lost somebody there. And we didn't find the body of somebody else. So two people, a couple, it's like you remember last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you keep going around. You have the Hanama Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Holona Bloho, which has just been a deadly area in the last year. In that whole coastline, we've lost, I believe it was 8 people in less than 2 years. And majority of them, I want to say, were hikers, not with no intention of going into the ocean,
mm-hmm.
but just got caught off guard by a large set and washed into the water. And the ocean is a washing machine. And if you don't know how to remain calm, there is no surviving it. So those definitely highlighted areas. And then you have the North Shore, Shark's Cove. You know, the big surf spot, Pipeline Sunset, we're not seeing a lot of the injuries and accidents over there because we have professional surfers. We have great watermen and women who know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the coastlines that we really are trying to emphasize to stay away from.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Just, the pulling, the shoreline waters, you know, you walk your kid, you roll up your pants, and you walk your kid in, just you want to get up to your knees, and then their feet get washed up from underneath them.
Right.
And they just go under, and there's usually a drop, and...
And that's where you get that,
to help you.
That washing machine action and suck you under. So the EMS, paramedics, and EMTs,
right.
Can you speak to that a little bit? What is the difference
right.
and what have you? I know one is go hand in hand in a sense.
Okay, so Honolulu Emergency Services Department, we just talked about ocean safety. Now we got emergency medical services. Those are your paramedics and EMTs, which have, like the lifeguards, come a long ways in their short tenure that they've been around. About in the 1970s is when we started seeing our first ambulance services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where people got the idea of ambulance drivers. They were the ones that you just pick you up and rush you to the hospital, where the most senior person on the ambulance would be the driver. And the less experienced would stay in the back with the patient.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely turned. Now we have some of the most highly competent paramedics there are in the nation. They're allowed to do at any level of any paramedic that you find anywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We have 20 ambulances for the island of Oahu. Those are all city ambulances. There is a private organization, AMR, but the city EMS runs the 911 calls.
Mm-hmm.
So when you call into 911, they're going to ask you, do you need police, fire, ambulance? If somebody's hurt, sick, you're going to ask for the ambulance. Now people get excited and they just start yelling for you to come. You know, so-and-so is hurt. But first thing we're going to ask you, and most important, is your address.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't know where you are, can't come and help you. Now, of course, there are these incredible cell phones that we can do GPS and such like that, but we will always confirm that address with you because we won't take the chance of a technical error.
Mm-hmm.
So we get your address, and then we'll start asking you questions. How old is the patient? What's wrong with the patient? And we'll continue asking questions, and this sometimes alarms people because they don't think that the crew is already on their way.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we get that location, we're dispatching ambulances
mm-hmm.
and the paramedics and the EMTs. Now, there's always at least one paramedic on our city ambulances. And then sometimes they're partnered up with either an EMT or another paramedic.
I see. Yeah, 911. And EMS, what is the best use of those numbers, or when should you call, or is there any protocol, or do you guys recommend assess the situation first,
yeah.
or can you speak to that?
Yes. So 20 ambulances, about an ambulance in every neighborhood. So Kailua has their ambulance, Kaneohe has their ambulance, and it's an emergency service. It's emergency medical services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't want anybody to stall or delay if they're unsure, but we do like to educate people on when and when not to call. Anything trauma-related with a lot of bleeding, stroke, chest pain, difficulty breathing, those are imminent childbirth. Those are all really good times. You mm-hmm. want to call 911 immediately. But there's nothing wrong if somebody's sick with yourself taking them to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We do respond to a lot of calls where we'll get there and we'll educate the patients and their families, and we'll let them know that, hey, you're going to be okay. You can drive yourself to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But in no way am I trying to say to not call if you think you need an ambulance.
Right. So there are a few things I'm sure you would like to share with the public as to how they can help you when they initiate that phone call. How can they help you with, you spoke a bit about it, what
right.
information, and should they make an assessment, or what can they do to help you make your job easier and respond quicker?
As hard as it's going to be, and hard even to say, you have to try to remain calm, because we have to get enough information from you that we can give to the crew, so when they're responding, they can get ready. So if the person is not breathing, you need to let us know. But again, first off, location. We need to know exactly where you are. If you have somebody that's able to go outside and wave us down, if you're in an area that there's numbers that are not on your house clearly enough, send a family member or a friend or a neighbor and ask them to wait for us. And that's another thing. If you can make your house numbers big and clear, that will help in delaying any response. Get medications ready. If the family member, the patient, has a list of medications, know why they're taking those medications as well. That will help. These are emergencies, so time is of the essence.
Mm-hmm.
If you have all this ready for us to go, it's going to cut down on our time at the scene. It's also going to let us know, okay, our paramedics are so educated that they know all these different types of medicines. So when they see them, they'll know, okay, this might be happening. Oh, she's on heart medication. Oh, you know what I'm trying to
mm-hmm.
say? So it's being prepared. If you already have somebody that's in your house that's sick, on dialysis, you're more likely to know what to do. But when you call 911, know that this is an emergency response. We know what we're doing, but we're going to ask for a little bit of help.
Mm-hmm. And what will dispatchers ask? You know, we know what we should be prepared to ask. What are some of the things you've gone through, some of them they should expect, mm-hmm. the caller expect mm-hmm. to be asked?
So what's your location, the gender of the patient, the age of the patient, what happened? We'll tell you not to give the patient anything to eat or drink. We'll ask you not to move the patient. We'll ask if the scene is safe, say it involved anything of a criminal nature or dangerous nature. We don't want to send our paramedics and EMTs. They don't have any sort of equipment on them to keep themselves protected. So sometimes we'll stand by and we'll wait for HPD to come. People sometimes ask, why does everyone come to a scene? Well, HPD, fire, and EMS will all come to a scene if we don't have much information on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So you can sort of eliminate that by staying calm and answering the dispatcher's questions as bestly as you can. We understand that there's some pieces that are just terrifying or, you know, causing you to panic, but the more information we can get from you over the phone, the better the scene will be once we arrive.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I've witnessed on occasion the helicopter, Fire One, I guess it's called, the yellow helicopter, and I've noticed they were actually training and deploying people, swimmers, in the water.
different.
Is that part of EMS or is that fire department?
That's the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what triggers that? Do you guys get a call, or depending on what's being reported, boat sinking or someone's floated out to sea or?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's what's being reported. So fire, if you call 911, they may say to you, okay, we're gonna have you speak to the fire, or I'm gonna bring the fire department on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll take your information and they'll decide based on their protocols and procedures what they need to send to the scene, if anything. So that's exactly how it works. We can all see the information as it's coming, which is a great piece of technology. It really expedites the call.
Mm-hmm.
That all the dispatches from police, fire, and EMS can see what's going on. And again, yes, if it is a ocean-related rescue, fire does have the capabilities of sending out their chopper, which can oversee and help guide the lifeguard in the water as to where the patient may be.
So if you had a Christmas stocking sitting on and you want, what would you want more? More money? And please, if you would, give a recruiting office phone number. How do they contact? Where do they apply for jobs or potential candidates? If you could, we got about 8 more minutes.
Okay. Well, anytime we ourselves go through social media as well. So we have Facebook pages for both the Honolulu Emergency Services Department and Honolulu Ocean Safety and Lifeguard Services, where we will update with any with the next recruit class information for ocean safety. And for EMS, you can go through Kapi'olani Community College. They run an excellent EMS program over there where you become an EMT, and it's an awesome job because you actually get paid to then go back to school and be a paramedic.
Mm-hmm.
And work for the city. So that's nice.
Well, yeah. So that's where they go then, and they could go online to the city website and look.
Right.
Okay.
Kapi'olani Community College for EMS, and we have the Honolulu Emergency Services Department. Just Google that, and that has ocean safety on there.
Okay. And one last thing, a couple of things. Yesterday there was a report of a shark.
Uh-huh.
Out at Haleiwa side.
Yes.
Was that confirmed? It's initially a 4 to 5 foot, then someone said it was 12 foot. What happened? What transpired there?
It's a good question.
Okay.
My report was a 4 to 5 foot shark. Let's see, that was spotted off of Haleiwa. The instructors, said that they saw a 12 foot one there earlier.
Mm.
So it sounds like it could have possibly been two different sharks. You see a lot more people calling in shark sightings.
Mm-hmm.
They're just on everybody's radar right now.
And plus, sharks live in the ocean.
And they always have
to. And there's the danger of the waves as well as the critters that are there. And we won't call them critters, but the marine life.
Yes. It's a risk to go into the ocean. It's beautiful, but it's dangerous.
Right.
And as long as you're aware of that and know how to swim, then hopefully you can enjoy yourself.
Now, real quickly, in case someone encounters a shark or a bite, what should they do? Real briefly, if you could, what would you guys recommend doing to give that person a better chance of recovering?
Well, what we've seen in the last 3 cases that we had was all 3 of those people stayed calm. 2 of them fought the shark off. So we know that if you put up a fight, you have a shot at winning. Then you got to remain calm. You got to swim with somebody. All those people, too, there was somebody else out there, whether you're surfing with somebody, body surfing. The guy in Lani Pai was swimming with somebody, and that's why they were lucky. If
mm-hmm.
not, we don't know what may or may not happen. They probably wouldn't have had survived
mm-hmm.
because the loss of blood is just so huge. The people, all the bystanders that responded to those incidences were heroes. They put on tourniquets. They stopped the bleeding, and that's imperative. And if you don't stop the bleeding, you're not going to save a life.
And it's imperative to get a call in as soon as you make that assessment that it's been a shark bite, to immediately, no delay.
No delay.
And you guys don't scold people if they thought it was something really bad, and then you got there and it's not as bad. You don't take people out back and whip them, do you, and make them?
No, not at all. No, we understand. We're human beings too, you know, and we want people to call in, and we appreciate it when they call in a timely manner when there is an emergency and they're not waiting, because that just delays care.
Yeah. Well, in closing, any last statements or any comments you want to take away?
No, I mean, all we want is for people to be safe this holiday season. If you see your lifeguards, your first responders, your paramedics, your EMTs out there, you know, give them a thanks. They appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of one another, because that's what it's all about.
Okay, well, Shane Enright, thank you, and I hope you come again, and hopefully you'll be available tomorrow for the John Nolan Show at 6 o'clock and talking, because health and safety is key to everybody that's out there. You just never know when you get hit by a wave. And the Carol Cox Show is just simply say, go buy a Zoom lens and stay afar, and you get the same picture, in fact, better pixels and wider shot and all of that if you just stay away and get a Zoom lens. And I have a GoPro, and for some reason it make you want to get closer.
Right.
And it's not
Carol,
good.
Carol, if I can, real quick, thank you very much for having me on and for putting this on.
All righty. Thank you, Shane. Aloha.
Take care.
Aloha.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. So, guys, that was Shane Enright. She is with the Oahu Safety Office and Ocean Safety Division, actually. And we do want to be safe, and we cannot afford to be as reckless. And for all of you out there that are taxpayers, let's see if we can encourage our city council to send more money or get more equipment, because we will benefit in the long run, whether it's our own personal safety or it's good for the economy, because the safer people are, they'll keep coming. But God forbid if it happens that there are constantly people drowning and, you know, and then these things come out. Just adequate coverage. And again, I know for a fact worldwide the Honolulu lifeguards are world renowned in their quality and their service. So we'll see you next week, and thank you all for joining. I'll talk to you later.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.
Yeah, leaving you one tidbit. Here in Honolulu, more than one person drowns on average a week in Hawaii, about 60 to 70 a year. We'll see you next week. Aloha.